Well, good morning. It's great to be back after being away for just a few days in Bangkok. Had a great time over the weekend. In fact, this time last Sunday, I was about 2 miles from the border of Myanmar in a place called Ratchaburi and enjoying sitting around a market put on by a group of people that are called the Karen people. The Karens are a persecuted minority group from Myanmar and have come across the border and settled as refugees in Thailand. And it was just amazing to be at this particular market in this little village, enjoying their food, and they even made good coffee, which is an extra bonus as well, given that you don't always get good coffee in Thailand. And it was by a river, and they had all these bamboo sort of deck platforms made, and you could sit on these bamboo deck platforms and just enjoy the river. And so that was my church last Sunday morning, and I enjoyed it very much. But it's good to be back, and today we're in the second Sunday of Advent, which is why we've lit two candles today. We do this as a bit of a tradition here at Gisborne Church of Christ, something we do each Advent season in the lead up to Christmas. And Advent is all about preparing room in our hearts for the coming of Jesus, the fact that he did come. And so each Christmas time, we like to pause and reflect and take time to open ourselves up to Jesus afresh. Now today I'm speaking from the reading which you've just had read out, Luke chapter 2, verse 22 to 35. And I made a little bit of a blue, and Nathan's not here, but I need to apologize to him because I shortchanged him a few verses at the end. I decided to speak on a few more verses as I prepared, and I'd let him know that we were stopping at verse 32 and we've gone through to verse 35. And what I might do, Oscar, we having a few problems at the moment with this jumping around in the back, or it's all good. So I might just read the passage again, just so that we're really into it and immersed into it as a way of also pausing, I suppose, and opening ourselves up to this Christmas story afresh. Luke chapter 2, verse 22 to 35. When the time came for the purification rites required by the law of Moses, Joseph of Mary took him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. As it is written in the law of the Lord, every firstborn male is to be consecrated to the Lord and to offer a sacrifice in keeping with what is said in the law of the Lord, a pair of doves and two young pigeons. Now there was a man in Jerusalem called Simeon who was righteous and devout, and he was waiting for the consolation of Israel, and the Holy Spirit was on him. It had been revealed to him by the Holy Spirit that he would not die before he had seen the Lord's Messiah. And so moved by the Spirit, he went into the temple courts. When the parents brought in the child, Jesus, to do for him what was the custom of the law that was required, Simeon took him in his arms and he praised God, saying, "Sovereign Lord, as you have promised, you may now dismiss your servant in peace. For my eyes have seen your salvation, for which you have prepared in the sight of all nations, a light for revelation to the Gentiles and the glory of your people Israel." Now the child's father and mother marveled at what was said about him. And then Simeon blessed them and said to Mary, his mother, "This child is destined to cause the falling and the rising of many in Israel and to be a sign of that which will be spoken against, so that the thoughts of many hearts will be revealed and a sword will pierce your own soul too." There was also a prophet, Anna, the daughter of Penuel of the tribe of Asher, and she was very old. She had lived with her husband 7 years after her marriage and then was a widow until she was 84. She never left the temple but worshipped night and day, fasting and praying, coming up to them at that very moment. And she gave thanks to the God and spoke about the child to who all were looking forward to the redemption of Jerusalem. Now, I'm in a 12-month period at the moment where I'm going to do or have done about 6 weddings. And it's quite a lot more weddings than what I'd usually do. I usually get sort of 2, 3, maybe 4 a year. This year, there seems to be a bit of a feast of weddings, which is all good. We've got one coming up 1st of Feb. I'm not going to miss it. Have I RSVP'd? Haven't I? Oh, I'm doing it now. Officially, I'm coming. Kate's going to be there as well. We're really looking forward to it. It's going to be fantastic. So we've recorded that. It's all there. We're definitely coming to the wedding. That's really good. Now, when a couple such as Nelson and Paige come and ask me to do their wedding, they're often surprised when I tell them, look, there's no charge. I'm happy to do your wedding, but there's no charge for my services. And it contrasts with everything else that is going on for them as they prepare a wedding, because when as soon as a business hears the word wedding, they jack up the prices and make sort of a bit of hay. And so for them to hear, no, there's no charge, it's a real surprise. It's actually one of the functions that I'm paid to do by this church, and so it feels disingenuous for me to actually double income on something that I'm already paid to do. So that's why I don't take payment for weddings. But once the couple get over the shock that there's actually something that's going to happen in their wedding which they won't have to fork out some serious dollars for, I then let them know that I do have one requirement. They have to do marriage preparation. They have to spend some time not just preparing for a day, but preparing for their married life together. And now it's not negotiable for me. I insist that that's the case. And sometimes it's actually a deal breaker. Couples who come to me to ask them to do their wedding decide not to get me to do their wedding anymore because they just can't be bothered with the marriage preparation. Nelson and Paige, you're not like that, are you? We're more than halfway through. I think we've got one session to go. So these guys have done a great job. They're sitting on an A-plus so far. They do get a score. They're sitting on A-plus, but they've got one meeting to go. So we'll see how you go, how you finish up after that. Now, married couples, they can spend hour upon hour preparing for the one day, for that big day, but spend no time reflecting on what it means for them to have a life and to share a life together. We're now well and truly into the Christmas season. Many of us will have all sorts of Christmas functions coming up. We'll have school concerts and presentations that we have to go to. We'll have presents that we need to buy. We've got work assignments that our boss is saying, you've got to get this done before Christmas, get it done. We'll have other things that are demanding of our time, preparing meals, decorations, getting the house ready, working out what we're going to have on Christmas Day and how we're going to do it and how it's all going to work out. And it just builds and it builds and we get busier and busier and we spend all our time focusing on one day, and we can miss the reason behind the one day. This passage that we were in today, that was read out earlier by Nathan, tells the story of Jesus being presented to the temple. And it tells the story of two elderly people coming up to Jesus and Mary and Joseph, Simeon and Anna. Simeon was an old man. He was near the end of his life, but he had received a promise from God that he would see the Messiah. And one day he was moved by the Spirit and he went up to the temple courts, and the promise of God from long ago came true on that day because he met this baby boy, and straight away he knows he's the Messiah, the light to the world. Now, Anna was also an elderly woman. She was a long-term widow. She'd only been married 7 years and her husband had died. And now she's aged 84 and she spends day and night at the temple worshipping and fasting and praying. She's an incredibly devout woman of God. And God speaks to her as this baby comes up towards the temple. It would be through him that the long-awaited redemption would come. Today, as we're in the second Sunday of Advent, I think we can be thankful that the early church leaders decided to put in place this Advent season, this time when we set aside of roughly a month, not quite, but close to a month, where in our busyness and all that's happening around us, we are reminded not just to prepare ourselves for Christmas Day, but we're reminded that there's another preparation that's being asked for us, a preparation of our hearts, one that's even greater importance than the actual day. We need to make space in our lives to slow down so that we too can experience and encounter Jesus. We can be reminded that he came and why he came. And when we look at the story of Simeon and Anna and their interactions with the baby Jesus, I think it highlights three helpful ways in which we can be preparing space in our hearts for Jesus at this Christmas time. The first one is to be open to the divine interruption. To be open to the divine interruption. Jesus is being taken to the temple by Mary and Joseph. They're there to have him circumcised, which is required by Jewish custom of the day. They're dedicating him to God, and both Simeon and Anna sort of barge into the scene here. They interrupt what's happening to speak out God's word and God's grace. When you look at Jesus' ministry on earth, it was all about the interruption. He goes from place to place, from here to there, and he often stops and pauses along the way, allowing for the interruption to occur, whether it's the blind beggar who needs healing, or the tormented man who needs freedom, or the fraudulent tax collectors who need restoration, or the cripple coming through the roof, or the woman who was bleeding. Again and again and again, Jesus allows himself to be interrupted. He stops what he's doing to care for those who need it. Now, as I've said already, I've spent the last few days in Bangkok and in other places in Thailand. When the weekend, last weekend, we went over towards Myanmar in Ratchaburi. But most of the time I was there, I was in Bangkok, and particularly in Klong Tui, the slum of Bangkok, where 80,000 people live in a very small, confined area. And that's where Chris and Jody live, and it's where they've set up their business, Second Chance, who we as a church are partnering with. Now, Chris and Jody have just done an amazing job. And every time I go and spend time with them, I just walk away so inspired by what they've been able to achieve with them and their neighbours coming alongside in setting up this incredible upcycle wares business. And when you spend time with them, I mean, it's inspiring enough just to spend time around Second Chance. And there's a group of us, there's five of us that are going over in March of next year who are going to experience this. And it's inspiring to go into this business and to see how all the ladies and a couple of the guys are working really hard, creating these amazing creations, taking donations off the expat community in Bangkok, upcycling them, and then selling them back for profit, and bringing in a prosperity and a dignity into that really desperate situation, which is particularly Chris and Jody's neighbourhood of Rom Gao in Klong Tui. But what's actually more inspiring than that, and that is inspiring itself, but what's more inspiring than that is actually just spending time with Chris and Jody in their neighbourhood, in their house, and walking around with them. They are constantly interrupted. A neighbour who needs to share about a hardship. A malnourished kid who just wants to play and have fun with you. A person who's unwell that needs prayer or some other type of care. Someone who's battling an addiction. Person after person. Constant interruption. But for Chris and Jody, this is where the real ministry occurs. As we go from here to there this Christmas time, as we go from place to place, even in our busyness, let's be open to the divine interruption. Those little moments where people come along, those little God moments where if we just pause and we stop and we can listen and we can show care and show God's love to others, whether it be the neighbor that we see in the street, that we're tempted to pass by because we've got stuff on, but instead we stop to chat. Whether it be the work colleague who drops that hint that all is not well for them and it's very easy to move the conversation on and to gloss it over, but instead, if choosing to ignore it, you stop and you pause and you take that conversation deeper. It might be one of your kids or your grandkids who want to spend some time with you just to be reminded of your love and your care for them, and you're busy and you don't really want to do it, but instead you just stop and you pause and you make it known to that young child that they are loved and they are valued. It's in the interruptions that we actually can see God at work. It's in the interruptions where we become his hands and his feet. It's in the interruptions where we can encounter with Jesus afresh. I think from this passage, a second helpful way of preparing ourselves for this Christmas time is that we can embrace joy. We can embrace joy. Now, babies are great, aren't they? Does anyone not love babies? I mean, babies are just wonderful. They're just like, you hold them and they just sit there most of the time and they sort of, I don't know, oohs and ahs and all that sort of stuff. I'm not very good at doing the cutesy thing, but you know, you get what I mean. We've got this little dog, actually. Chloe is the size of a baby, right? And it's like you get your baby fixed with Chloe when you take her into her arms and when she just sits still and looks up at you and Well, babies don't lick, do they? But anyway, you're doing that. I just love babies. And I especially love the babies who you can hand back to their parents. When they need a nappy change or a feed or they're crying or whatever it is, you know, here you go. But isn't it great just holding a baby? Something about holding a newborn baby that brings so much joy to people's lives. And both Simeon and Anna show great joy when they come across Jesus. They show great joy when they get to hold this baby boy. When I look back on this year that I've just had, it's been the busiest year in our household by far. We're suckers for punishment, it's fair to say. We took on 2 full-time jobs at the start of the year. We knew that it was probably not sustainable, but we had to give it a go just to see how it would work, and we've worked out that it hasn't. But that's okay. We've been busy. And on top of that, we've got 3 busy kids who love their sport and have activities. We've got our kids and ourselves who have social lives, and so there's all that sort of stuff going on. We've had 3 overseas trips within our family. We've been doing additional study, master's level study. We've had a 40th birthday, a 70th birthday, an 18th birthday, all in the last month. It's been crazy busy. And before you get too concerned about us burning ourselves out or anything, don't be worried about that. We're actually taking some steps to change that, and you know, that's all going to be fine moving forward, but it's been a crazy busy year. And what I've learned, when you're running at a really hectic pace, one of the first things that goes is your joy. And to find the joy, to embrace joy, we need to give it time. We need to give it time to reflect, to think about what's happening around us, to find things around us that we can be grateful for. And there are always things that we can be grateful for. This week when I was in Thailand, I had the opportunity to be quiet for a bit, to be slow and to be still. There were some moments of time where Chris and Jody were busy, they had to do other things, and I was just in my hotel room and really still, or I'd go for a walk or whatever it is, and it was wonderful just to slow down, just to find those moments of time and to reflect on the things that I'm grateful for a loving and loyal and faithful wife of almost 17 years now, for an eldest daughter who's blossoming before my eyes, becoming a really funny young lady. She's actually hilarious. She shares the same sense of humor as I do, and so we find each other very funny. I'm grateful for a son who shares my passion in sport. And we have that opportunity to connect, and I love the way he's working hard and developing into a good sports person. I'm grateful for my youngest daughter who just loves to dance all day, every day, never stops dancing. Dancing in itself brings joy. I'm grateful for a God who loves me, who is present even when I'm not aware, who has a plan even though sometimes I doubt, who forgives, who restores, who's just loving me all the time. I'm grateful for my God. As we head into Christmas, one of the lessons that we can learn from the likes of Simeon and Anna is to embrace joy, to be grateful for that which God has blessed us with, to take time to give praise to Jesus for loving us, for dying for us, for forgiving us, for restoring us, for coming and living amongst us. And thirdly, what we can learn from this passage as we prepare ourselves for Christmas is to reflect on sorrow, to reflect on sorrow. Simeon spoke to Mary about the sorrow that she would experience as Jesus would grow into a young man. Mary, his mum, would see him opposed. She would see him criticized. She would see him judged. Eventually, she would see him suffer and die on the cross. And that sorrow that Mary would go on to experience is something that Simeon describes here in verse 24 as like a sword that will pierce her soul. In some sections of the church today, there's a thinking that leaves little room for sorrow and suffering in our faith. It's a thinking that implies that if you're not living a truly victorious life, then perhaps there's something that might be wrong with you. Maybe it's because you've got a lack of faith. Maybe there's some sin in your life, whatever it is. And I get what this thinking is trying to achieve. I get the encouragement to live by faith. I get that we need to be expectant and rely on God and all of that. But sometimes things happen in our life that are just completely rubbish. They are unjust, undeserved, and unfair. It's our condition. It's the human condition. We experience sorrow in our lives. And to think that somehow that experience of sorrow is because of inadequacies in our faith, well, that's just a crock. I'm sorry. It's a load of codswallop. Can I say that word? I quite like that word. In Hebrews chapter 11, we have described to us what are called the heroes of our faith, the greatest of our faith, people like Abraham, Moses, Rahab, David, and others, and every single one of them experienced sorrow in their lives. Only one of Jesus' disciples got to live to an old age. The rest of them were martyred for their faith. And John, who got to live to an old age, well, he died in prison. On Thursday night, I got into Klong Toi. And as we arrived, originally our plan was to head out to the camp, but I got in late, and so Chris said, "Let's just come back to my place, we'll sleep, we'll get up early in the morning and head off." So I said, "Yeah, let's do that." And we got back, and it would have been about 9:30, 10 o'clock, and there were about half a dozen little boys playing soccer in their courtyard. So we joined in for a bit. A couple of these boys were really small, looked like about 4 or 5 years old, and they're really good little soccer players. I said, Chris, these guys' skills are amazing for, you know, 4 or 5 year olds. Chris says, "No, they're nine or ten. It's the impact of lifelong malnourishment. Sorrow's all around us, actually. Sometimes we see it, and sometimes we experience it. Sometimes our children are contrary. Sometimes we have parents who put us down. Sometimes we have a boss who is bombastic. Sometimes there's that ill health that we experience where we can't seem to get healing. Sometimes we have loved ones who are lost, or we despair over the departed. But whatever it is, we experience a sorrow within. And so while at Christmas time we must embrace joy, we must be open to the divine interruption, we also need to reflect on sorrow. You see, tears are often the lubricant of faith because it's the experience of sorrow we cry out to God. It's in the experience of sorrow that we're able to know and experience His peace. It's in the experience of sorrow that we grow in our understanding of the sorrow and the suffering that He experienced for us. Because this baby becomes a redeemer. On the cross, bashed and beaten, assaulted and abused, crushed and crucified. So at Christmas we celebrate a child, but we celebrate knowing that that child grew up. And he grew up into a child, into a man who would bring healing and freedom, who would stretch out his arms on the cross, his body broken for our brokenness. And the question that I have for us today is that as Christmas draws near, as we prepare room in our hearts to him, what's your response to Jesus today? Is it to commit to being open to that divine interruption over the next couple of weeks? Is it to find gratefulness and embrace joy? Or is it to be honest? Is it to reflect on the sorrow in our lives? And in doing so, reflect on the suffering and the sorrow that Jesus experienced for us.